This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore. Why don't you talk to me?
Good evening and welcome to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9. That was a bit of a flashback to the 80s with Pat Benatar. My name is Kathy and co-hosting with me tonight is Nicola. How's it going with you?
I'm going to be honest, Kathy. I'm really glad we've got a long weekend. I must have like eye bags down to my knees by now.
I wasn't going to say anything before, but yeah, look, you look like a lot of people around Melbourne. Everyone's gagging for a 4-day week ever since we had that wonderful fortnight with Easter.
I mean, really, we should just make every week shorter. I think that that's kind of what it's coming down to. I mean, I can't cope after having had a long weekend with having a normal one after that. It's like, oh, a full week at work, really?
I know. A 4-day week would be nice. I think of the perennial long weekend. The only drawback for that is if you got your day off on a Tuesday or a Wednesday.
Yeah.
That's just rubbish. You can't go anywhere. No long weekend deals.
No, but still, then a Wednesday, you'd only ever go to work for 2 days at a time. That's kind of sweet.
Very true. Well, speaking about sport and relaxation and leisure, tonight's show is all about sport. Last Sunday, Olympic swimmer Daniel Kowalski came out in a huge way. It happened around the same time that AFL players launched their very public campaign to coincide with International Day Against Homophobia, which is on May 17, which is an interesting move considering that no AFL players are out. Not a single one.
Really? I didn't know.
Not a single one. So we're going to be talking today to Helen Soki. She's the CEO of the Victorian Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commission about how her organisation is working towards eliminating homophobia in sport. We're also going to be chatting to Lynn Hillier, who's a researcher, and she's going to be giving us a rundown. She was doing the Writing Themselves In surveys, which is about GLBTI youth, talking a bit about Beyond Blue because they've come under fire as well for not looking at depression amongst young people. And this is kind of the ties in with the whole coming out thing as well as famous sports people. So it should be interesting. Now,
I really want to hear about wacky sports. I want to hear of this homophobia and curling. You know, these are the kind of things that I want to know.
Say it, yes. Just sod Olympic level swimming. Is this what you're saying? You want the weird and wacky as well as the mainstream.
Of course, there's like cheese rolling and things like that, which are classified as sports. You know,
cheese rolling. Is it like Jaffa rolling down the aisle in a cinema?
No, it's like they get these massive wheels of cheese in a place in England and they roll them down big hills. I know.
What for?
Sport.
Okay.
Why do we do any sport?
See, now that brings up a whole level of whether or not sport, and curling is a very good example, and Shane Warne's also a very good example, whether you actually need to be an athlete or have any particular skill to participate.
Well, look, I think Scotland's a great example of a place that has sports that don't necessarily require a great lot of athletic ability. Darts, pool, like snooker, these tend to be our sports, pub sports. Scotland's world champions in a lot of these. Oh, and fighting. Because that goes after the pub.
Oh, yeah, people, right.
Boxing tends to be one we're quite strong in.
Okay. So, yeah. Well, maybe we've got some queer Scottish listeners out there who might be willing to give us a bit of a heads up on their sporting activities. But now to the news of this week.
It's funny. I feel like this week's news is a little bit like a soap opera because we've got like birth, marriage and divorce all in one episode. It's kind of...
We need to be a registry, maybe a news registry.
Yes, yeah, it's bizarre. But yeah, the first one is, the first story I've come across is a British lesbian couple who are actually going to be the first... well, have been the first to jointly sign a birth certificate of their child. And it's basically been, they basically said they want to share the fact that it was such a historical moment. It is historical. The British birth certificates have been going for 170 years and they've always said mother and father's name yep. on them. But after the 2008 really catchy name for an act, Human Fertilisation and Embryology Act. See, yeah, it's not a very easy name.
As difficult to pronounce as it is to spell.
Yes, absolutely. But it basically meant that children of same-sex partners can have both of them listed because it's like parent one, parent two on the birth certificate. And it was really fought hard by a lot of Christian groups, and they're apparently quite dismayed by the fact that it's all now come into force. But congratulations to Natalie Woods and Elizabeth Knowles, who have been the first people to do this historic thing.
I think that's amazing. And how does that do you know the laws in Victoria? And because I think there's been some changes about birth certificates, because it's one of those sticky issues, isn't it? Because you've got this lesbian couple in the UK from Brighton, they used an anonymous donor.
Yeah.
So there's no gay father who could go on the certificate as donor, because I think that happens in Australia, but not. I don't think the two mothers are on birth certificates. Someone may be able to.
Yeah, someone might be able to help us out with that. Yeah, I'm honestly not too sure, but this is certainly being touted as something quite historic. Because I don't know what other places actually do it. I don't know if anyone else. I mean, this was a Australian.com.au site that reported it. So,
well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because we've got another story later on that, you know, from another country that's doing something very different, and all these countries seem to be just getting ahead of us on all these legalities. We're just getting left behind, like the, you know, outback colony that we are.
Yeah, well, it's good to hear that someone else is as backwards as us. Let's go to America. basically a lesbian couple in Texas have been told they can't divorce because they got married in Massachusetts. I mean, Texas basically doesn't recognise gay marriage, so they won't even let... I think they accept that people's partnerships when they've been married in other states, but essentially I think what's been said is that if they were to recognise the legal proceeding of divorce, they'd have to legally recognise the union in the first place.
Oh, right. So this is one of the things about the US as it is in Australia. We don't have a national program or national, you know, guidelines for marriage or civil unions or registries or whatever we'd like to call them. So basically the Texans are going, well, you can live here as a couple if you like. You can call yourselves married, but we're not going to legally divorce. You would think that a state that doesn't want gay couples to be married would just go, you want a divorce? Fantastic. Off
awesome.
You go.
Yeah. Here's our case studies. Every gay person that's lived here got divorced because we didn't recognise the relationship until they were. But that would be a great statistic for Texas. But no, basically, it's quite interesting because one of the parties has said they didn't divorce as an equal rights statement. They just wanted to get on with their lives. I mean, imagine that. I mean, this was 2004 that they actually separated. We're now in 2010. Yep. They've clearly been trying... They've got a child together.
Right.
And they've been trying to just... They had a business. Messy, messy, messy. You know, all the dramas that go with a breakup. And you've got someone going, nah.
You have to stay together. Nah. You have to go back to Massachusetts.
What? I mean, they've been... I mean, you'd think they'd have given up by now and go, all right, well, I guess I'm stuck with you for life. But no, they're still trying to fight it out, the poor people.
So does that mean if they want to get married or get married? Well, they couldn't, could they? I was going to say, would that mean that they'd be bigamists then if they went and had another partner because they're technically still married?
Well, I think if they married a man in Texas, then that marriage would supersede their partnership because it's not got a legal recognition in Texas.
See, that's just comedy of errors.
Well, it's kind of like the registry here as well. You can, if you in Victoria, you go on the relationship register for gay and lesbian people. That's all great, but one of you can actually go off and marry a man, like as lesbians, we could go and marry a man, and then it automatically voids the relationship register. So
Well, that just shows how little power and authority it has.
Yeah.
Really, isn't it?
It was kind of bizarre because my partner and I were having the kind of, you know, it's one of these things we should do to, you know, show support of it and that it's the right thing and lots of people want it. But when we actually read into it, we're like, oh, it's a little bit namby-pamby. Yeah. I don't think I'd bother.
It's a bit naff. Yeah. I don't want any officialdom if it's not going to be recognised in the state of Texas.
Yeah, but like on more positive news, talking about progression with gay rights marriage, Nepal wants to host gay weddings on Everest.
I love this story. I think this is the funniest thing to ever come out of Nepal. Boom boom.
Yeah, no, look, it's absolutely brilliant. Basically, Nepal wants to reinvent itself as a gay friendly tourist destination, and they want to attract millions of tourists every year from the current 400,000. They want to be the gay destination for tourism. So, that's basically, they're being quite forthright in saying it. You know, we're completely changing this country. It's a newborn republic. We want to showcase this change. We also want to re-establish tourism as a major industry.
I love it. What are they going to do? Are they going to put people, you know, in rucksacks and send them off to base camp and then have little rainbow flags everywhere and have a celebrant on site?
Oh, yes. Apparently, they're already discussing the prospect of holding gay weddings at the base of Everest and giving gay couples the chance to enjoy their honeymoons with tours and elephant back. Great, these guys have thought about it.
Yeah, there's a brain. There's a brain ticking in the in Nepalese tourism that's just going, you know what, we've got an untapped market here.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that their new constitution will actually enshrine gay rights and allow gay marriage. Nepal is getting gay marriage before freaking Australia. And I was saying before, one of my friends was over there for ages and their electricity cuts in and out all the time. They can't get the internet to run. But they'll let gay people get married. That's progressive.
Yeah, that's progressive. They may not have power, but gay people have power.
Yeah, they've got power. Yeah.
Real power, social power, just not gas power.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, and there's one more little one that I want to mention just because it's so nuts.
Yeah.
And it basically, it's in America again. I feel like I should have left it on the happy note with Nepal. But an American homeowner has painted his fence with the words Leviticus 20:13, to be gay equal death. Right. On his fence, right? Big fence, splattered that all across it. You'd think someone's going to go, well, that's inciting hatred towards a certain group, or that might be seen to incite violence.
Mm.
Nah, they're pretty cool with it in Wyoming. They've basically just said, it's not the city's place. You know, it's not.
You can paint whatever you like on the fence. Well, is he going to paint something against African Americans there next?
Well,
something against women? Would he make it like a little wall of hatred?
Apparently, he says, "I'm not doing it to be spiteful. Gay people are bashing themselves." My fence seems like the proper setting to express an opinion. Yes, I think that all the time.
Oh.
I don't like the way that my train was late 3 days in a row, so I'm going to paint my fence.
You're going to paint. We say, you know, metro equals death or something. You'd probably get the council to come down and have a quiet word to you.
Yeah,
about something like that. But this is one of those. This goes into the bizarre and weird file, this one.
Along with the good, bizarre, weird one, Nepal.
Yeah, with Nepal. Go, Nepal.
Yeah, very happy with that one.
Funny. All right. Well, on that note, all right, we're going to break for a song and a few ads from our sponsors, and we'll be back shortly with Helen Soki from the Victorian Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commission, and we've been talking all about gay sports people coming out, lots of issues coming up. And welcome back to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9. My name is Kathy, and co-hosting with me tonight is Nick. Now, joining us in the studio now is Helen Soki. She's the Commissioner or CEO of the Victorian Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commission. Previously, she was CEO and Chief Conciliator with the Victorian Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commission. I've got that wrong, haven't I?
It's a little bit confusing.
It is a bit confusing.
We've basically what happened, I was the chief executive for about 4 years, and then there have been changes to the Equal Opportunity Act. So last year the first stage of those changes occurred. And they were what you'd call the governance changes, and I had to apply, and I'm really delighted that I got the job as commissioner. So I now have a chief executive, who Karen Toohey, who's a fantastic woman who's come from the Australian Human Rights Commission. So she's doing the hard work, and I'm doing the nice stuff, going out talking to stakeholders and this type of thing. So yes.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad we got that cleared up.
Yeah.
Now, earlier this week, you released a statement, and we've been talking about Daniel Kowalski's coming out, which was a big splash in the Sunday Age here.
Oh, that was a good pun as well. Big splash.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, look, that wasn't even meant. I do that sometimes.
Sure.
I have this knack, you know, way with words. But it was a big thing. It was a very big story, and it was tied in with a couple other feature stories as well. And you released a statement congratulating him and say, you know, what a great thing it was that someone of his stature, because he is an Olympian, a medalist, and I think quite a team leader within the swimming fraternity as well, and certainly with the Olympic teams. I remember seeing quite a bit about him. So, from your point of view, with your position. How important is this for someone like Daniel to come out?
Well, I think that clearly Daniel's someone who has a star quality, as you've said, and what I think is interesting is how candidly he spoke about his own experiences of being a gay man and how long he chose not to reveal that publicly. And so I think for other people to read that and then to see that he did make that statement, in a sense, starts to build on the momentum that I think is already there around homophobia in sport and really working against that type of homophobia. So I think it's critical that that we have people like Daniel Kowalski making those kinds of statements and, you know, in a sense, willing to use their star quality to leverage for the rest of the community one way or the other.
Yeah, he was very candid, because in his interview he said he was tired of living a lie. Mm. That was one of his quotes. And then he said, you know, things pop in my head that make me realise that I was clearly suppressed, that I clearly suppressed these thoughts of being gay because it was wrong. As a male, it's wrong, but even more so as an athlete, an elite athlete.
Mm. And, you know, I think that's the danger in a way, that there are probably many people out there that have that experience, men and women. And when they read that, I think there must be some sense of affirmation. And I suppose, I mean, in a general sense, in the jurisdiction that we work in, discrimination in all sorts of forms means that people carry a load one way or the other. I think the difference in relation to, you know, what we would call sexual orientation in a, you know, that kind of legalistic sense, is that there's, I think people have a sense of almost a kind of double jeopardy when they feel that they have to stand up for their rights, because in the first instance it means they have to come out, and then the second instance it often means they then have to say, I've been treated less favourably. Any of these kind of stories that in a sense build the community's understanding. So this is, you know, there's a growing sense that, okay, there are different people. You know, there are tall people, there are short people, there are gay people, there are black people. There are men and women. You know, we haven't even managed to quite nail that properly yet, let alone any of all those other things. You know, we need to keep having those stories there. And if you think about it, there's a whole lot of people in the community that are in their own little bubble, and no one ever challenges their reality about homosexuality. And what these kind of stories do is to really challenge that and to force them to think differently, one way or the other, and not to think it's the exception, you know, that there are just some people who have chosen a particular life path that's wrong or in their terms. So, yeah, I think it's really critical. And, you know, in some ways we get a bit sick of riding on the celebrity sort of messaging, but when it happens in this way, then I think we get leverage off it and make the most of it.
Because pro athletes or elite Olympians, you can count them on one hand.
Mm.
The amount, the number of people who are openly gay. Matthew Mitchum is probably one of the more recent examples, and he's a young, obviously gold medalist in the last Olympics in diving. it seems as though, is there, you know, I wonder what the reasons are, because on the surface it would seem, well, I don't want to lose my endorsements, or I'm worried about, you know, my fans or having support, or is it more being known as the gay athlete, you know, like the Ian Roberts?
Don't you think it probably is a bit of both? It's quite interesting. I have a son who's not an elite athlete, but he's an athlete. And it's really given me insight, particularly when you think about the single sport athletes, the swimmers, and this kid of mine's a runner, and how much they have to focus on a, you know, 47-second moment of their life to actually achieve what they have to achieve. And if you think about when they get to this elite stage, you know, how much they're balancing, you know, in terms of just priming their body, maintaining their fitness, managing their relationships with sponsors, with coaches, with family, with other teammates in a highly competitive environment. I think it must be incredibly challenging to try to think about, you know, what judgment do I have to bring on this issue about my something that's about me, you know, my particular sexual orientation, and particularly knowing how much focus is on particularly the Olympic athletes. I mean, we've seen the bad stories as well about the young chap who was charged with assault, the swimmer who missed out on his Olympic bid. So I suspect it's a bit of both. And you can't blame them for being concerned about things like sponsorship or public support. And I just really come back to it that even more so than the team sports, these single competitor athletes are operating in this really highly charged, thoroughbred type of environment, which I don't think I really appreciated until I had a little bit of insight at a personal level.
Yep.
And all we see are these magnificent physiques and these, you know, successful, healthy young people, but there's a whole other story behind it, and they're balancing a lot of things.
Well, it's interesting that Daniel didn't come out until well after he's retired. So he's been, you know, he's been out of the game for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
It's we talked a little bit just before about this has come out at the same time, and I think Daniel actually said he was kind of inspired to make his statement because of the new initiative by AFL players and the AFL to send a message about homophobia and to have the public campaign with players and coaches holding signs like the ACON initiative that they did, that Ruby Rose and other celebrities have been involved in. Do you find it interesting that the AFL, with such a, you know, a massive sporting organisation, is supporting a cause when not one of their players is out?
It is interesting. I think if I can kind of answer it in a diplomatic way, I think that the AFL has to be given a lot of credit for being a very powerful brand that's used its brand to raise awareness about a whole range of issues and a whole range of social policy issues, and that they have now moved into this space, I think is critical, because it will show enormous leadership to other sporting codes, which are major sporting codes, where we don't hear about this. We don't hear about it in, I don't think, unless you guys know something different, but we don't hear about it in netball, which is one of the most highly participated sports in the country.
No, or where you'd probably find a lot of lesbians as well. Or cricket.
I was going to say lady. I think women's cricket, though, there was definitely something. I said this another time we were talking about sport. One of my friends was in the Australian women's cricket team and was outed as the result of a story in the paper. Mm-hmm. Like, her family didn't know anything about it.
That's right.
But yeah, basically, they'd said there'd been a story because someone had said the reason I didn't get into the team was because I wasn't a lesbian, and they're all lesbians. And then she kind of was dragged into this whole thing because someone wasn't happy about not being selected. So, yeah, I think it's one of these things when you're going to be in the public eye in sport, even when you're not necessarily that much in the public eye in sport, it's a real danger with your social life if you're not ready to discuss it.
And I think that's I deliberately use the example of netball because that's seen as a women's sport. But that's the other interesting thing, isn't it, that when women play what are traditionally male sports, then they are automatically categorised as being of a particular sort of woman. And I don't know whether they are or they aren't, but it's that kind of stereotyping that occurs. And I think the big kind of sporting codes like cricket and even rugby. I know there have been some rugby players that have come out. They haven't done as well in this space of actually saying, well, you know, how do we use our brand and how do we show leadership in this space? So that's a roundabout way of answering one bit of that question. Is it curious that there haven't been any other, AFL players that have come out? I think everything that's happening in this space at the moment is the building blocks to creating an environment where people might feel more secure about doing that.
It's interesting you talk about sport male women who play predominantly male sports, I suppose. We've got a text in from Jody, and she says she's a soccer player. Soccer is a funny one. She says, many conclude if you are a girl and play soccer, you are gay. Mm. Yet most of the girls I play with are straight. But some young girls and other teams accentuate the stereotype and use it as a form of insult and sledge their opponents, calling them dirty lesbians. If you defend them closely, it's funny that they are the ones who protest the stereotype the loudest.
Yes. They are the ones that... No, say that last bit again.
Oh, I've lost it.
Yeah.
But she's basically saying that, there's that stereotype of... You know, that's a whole other can of worms too. But women who play male-dominated sports... could be, or even women who play sports generally are considered a little bit, the stereotype is, oh, well, you must be a bit butch, which is something that,
I think it's kind of sad when someone's just got a healthy interest in pursuing a health, it's a fitness thing, it's an enjoyable thing being part of a team. But I think team sports definitely get it the worst as well.
Mm.
I think individual sports, it's less perceived in... Like in tennis and things like that, though there are some out women in tennis. I think it tends to be in team sports that people tend to use the kind of try and use it as an offensive language and things like that.
Mm. I just think there's enormous complexity in it. So if you think about some of the elite tennis players who are out, and there's always an insinuation that somehow they have an unfair advantage because they're big or they're muscular or, they're really super fit. So we've got a long way to go in this space, and I can only just reiterate that we know, generally speaking, from when we look at discrimination in a general sense, that where there's momentum around an issue like this, which is really trying to challenge very negative and ill-informed perceptions in a community, and to build a much more positive kind of statement around how people fit into communities and how different they are, then we've got to make the most of it.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be coming back and speaking with Lynn Hillier. She's going to join us on the phone. She's from La Trobe University's Australian Research Centre in Sex, Health and Society, and she's involved in a project called Come Out to Play, which has been a survey of gay and lesbian people in sport. And she'll hopefully be able to shed some light on this whole area of research, because off air we did say that the movement for change, a lot of it needs to be research-based. So...
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Welcome back to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9. My name is Kathy, and co-hosting with me tonight is Nick. And in the studio we have Helen Soki from the Victorian Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commission.
I feel like I should apologise for the music tonight in a way.
Yeah.
Maybe not. But
you should.
Should I? Okay, it's from the Ultimate Sports album. I couldn't help myself. When I heard that we were going to be doing a sports show tonight, I started trying to draw these really tenuous links between songs I liked in sport. never got anywhere with it. So I went all out with a cheesy ultimate sports
album. I think you've done well with Survivor, though. I mean, considering when we first talked about it, the only things we could come up with was Queens, We Are the Champions, and what did you say?
Chariots of Fire.
Yeah, so we've gone one better for that. But we are talking sports tonight. We're talking about Daniel Kowalski's coming out, the AFL's campaign, and now joining us on the line, we have Lynn Hillier from La Trobe University's Australian Research Centre in Sex, Health and Society. Good evening.
Hi, how are you?
Yes, very well. We're all revved up after Eye of the Tiger, so we're sort of moving along. Now, we've been discussing a whole range of issues around sport, gay people in sport, and certainly at the elite level. You've been involved in a study called Come Out to Play, which has been a local survey of GLBTI youth, I think, or people around their experiences in sport. Would you like to tell us a bit about that?
Yes, it's not youth, although young people are the largest part of the study. It's a little over 300 people, and it's really gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people, and it's really talking about their experiences with sport. So it covers a lot of things, and people just talk about their experiences, including things like, are you out at sport? Do you play team sports or individual sports? And which of those are you out in? What have been your experiences in those sports? And it's interesting because it really looks at those gendered layers. You know, what are the women playing? What are the men playing? What about traditional masculine sports that the women are playing? What's it like for them? What's it like for the men in the traditional masculine sports?
It was interesting. Actually, we've just been talking a little bit about women playing traditionally male sports, and the kind of idea that there's a lot of lesbians that potentially play, or that other teams, basically that teams imply that there are and things like that. Did you find that team sports that were traditionally male sports had higher levels of lesbian participation and more people being out?
Look, it's incredibly interesting. There's a real contrast in traditional masculine sports between men playing them and women playing them. So I've also been involved in research with a women's football team, which was interesting as well, and the findings are the same. Basically, if you're a young woman and you're playing football, for example, AFL, the assumption is that you're all lesbians. So it's like a filter. So many women won't play because they're terrified of being called a lesbian. But when you eventually get to the women who are playing the sport, who are both lesbian and heterosexual, they're all assumed to be lesbians. And so that provides a really interesting space in which women can experiment with their sexuality. And there aren't those expectations because they're transgressing gender already, and then they're free. With the men, with the women, they're expected to be lesbians. With the men, they're expected to be heterosexual because there's so much intimacy in AFL with men. It's unthinkable that there would be anyone who was gay in the team, because then the men in all of those intimate situations could end up being the object of desire, and that's—I think—it's just too terrible a thing to contemplate.
What a what an unusual double standard!
It's amazing.
How can that? How can that kind of culture be changed? Does that come from the club level, or is it from participants, or from or fans?
I think for real change, and of course homophobia, homophobic abuse, homophobic beliefs are the ways that all of these things are policed. I think it has to happen from top down, bottom up, in the way that a number of things are happening now. So, we have no AFL sportsmen who are out, but an outness would be fantastic. Having policies which name homophobia and give direction, leadership, that this isn't acceptable, and those policies are happening. I suppose men experiencing other men who are same-sex attracted and nothing happening, the world not falling in, would be a really good beginning as well.
Yeah, I guess I wonder, I can't remember exactly, but I wonder how Ian Roberts' teammates felt after he made his public admission, because to date I believe he's the only rugby league player who's come out in and said that he's gay.
That's right, and actually from my memories of his book, the world didn't fall in. And, you know, things were reasonably okay.
Because it's interesting that you, because in the statistics in one of your other surveys, the Writing Themselves In survey, the sport and schools are the two main areas where people experience homophobia. So we're having a top-down kind of effect that's it's got to come from schools and from sporting commissions, I imagine.
Absolutely, absolutely. In education departments, leadership has to be shown, and I guess that was the message of the last Writing Themselves In. And to give it its due, the Victorian Education Department has absolutely taken notice of that and has included homophobia and discrimination in its policies, and has included discrimination and same-sex attraction in the learning standards. So that's been quite amazing. But certainly we found, as far as homophobia was concerned, I mean, we're talking about sport, places where young people and young men in particular are vulnerable are changing rooms and toilets. And a lot of the violence happens there. And I remember one young man in Writing Themselves In saying that, in fact, he had to leave the rugby team at school because the other kids said they wouldn't play if he played, and then there wouldn't be a rugby team. So there's all that stuff about, you know, that stereotype about, gay men being attracted to anyone, making passes at any, you know, silly
assumptions,
stereotypes. So it means that those places are not safe.
Wow. Well, hopefully things like the AFL move will actually help these people.
But, let's hope so.
Indeed. Well, thank you very much, Lynn, for your time. We're running out of time this evening, but it's been wonderful to speak with you.
Pleasure.
Okay, that was Lynn Hillier from La Trobe's Australian Research Centre in Sex Health and Society. Now, Helen Soakie's still with us. What do you make of that that whole comment about something that you echoed as well, things coming from the top down, and certainly something that your organisation is looking at, and you've got initiatives going
sure.
on as well?
Sure. Well, I think it's we have to tackle it from every which way, and it's interesting, the example that Lynn gave is one that I've used in a number of speeches and presentations that I've made, including to a junior assembly at a boys' school, just to, you know, talk about, an individual's story is so much more powerful than saying we have legal protections here, there and everywhere. But the Commission is one of the many partners to an online training tool called Play By The Rules, and that's very much targeted to clubland, so, you know, sporting groups out in the community. And that, amongst its many themes, also tackles the issue of homophobia. And we think that's important. And Play By The Rules has recently signed a contract with Sporting Pulse, which is a major online rostering resource. So we'll have those messages there. And we're about to embark on a project with the Australian Sports Commission, which has a particular focus on homophobia in sport. So just as the research that people like Lynn and Carolyn Sims and others has done, to collect these stories and to put some data behind this, we're hoping that the resources that we'll produce will kind of complement and arm different people to understand their responsibilities as, if you like, duty holders in clubs and sporting associations. And the last thing I have to say is that if anyone does feel that they have been treated less favourably on the basis of their sexual orientation, even if they're not really sure what's going on, we would encourage them to ring us, and if I can just give a phone number.
Absolutely.
If you ring our inquiry line on 1300 292 153, so that's 1300 292 153, Any of our staff will be able to talk to you about what your rights are, whether it's in sport or in the workplace or at school, and you can ring anonymously. You don't have to name yourself in the first instance.
Which is a great idea. We'll just run through a few SMS too. We've got one here from Tim and Kieran about Daniel Kowalski saying our neighbour used to be Daniel's manager and says he struggled with being gay. She feels guilty that she didn't ask him and offer support now, but good on Daniel for coming out. Also, Lorraine has sent in a text. It was interesting, we were talking before about women's groups and sledging. She said, top interview, broad-ranging and balanced. Thanks, Lorraine. She says, first-time Spikers, which is the Melbourne's
volleyball.
It's a queer team. First-time Spikers played in a straight A-grade comp. They got lots of sledging. She said, as captain, I told the guys in my team the best way to beat them
to respond
was to beat them, and she said we won the grand final.
Ah.
So there's a bit of justice as well. And also a question in here from Anonymous. How can we expect attitudes in AFL to change when there are prominent people like Eddie Maguire simultaneously involved in AFL administration, sport commentary and public homophobia? I agree it needs to start from the top, but the top is a pretty scary place right now. Helen, what do you think?
Well, I think the Eddie Maguire comment around the Winter Olympics was inappropriate, but I think the public reaction he got put him back on his heels, and I think he's in fact made a public apology, and if nothing else, we hope that he's had a good hard look at, you know, how it impacts on people when he makes those comments. But, you know, we could go on about all of the challenges that exist, you know, if you think about the footy show and other programs on TV. You know, we've got a long way to go. But the thing is, there is a glimmer of hope at the top, and I really think that's what the AFL initiative has demonstrated. And what we've got to do is to, you know, pursue those opportunities and keep calling the Eddies and the Sam Newmans and the other people to account when they make those comments, either in the media or by lodging complaints.
Good idea. I did like the fact that after Eddie did all of that, he invited Brian, the Olympic ice skater, to come to Australia and stay in his house. And then Eddie ended up being in DNA, which is a very prominent gay men's magazine, and had an interview with him. Mm. So he went. He's not backward in coming forward when he wants to
try and kiss and make up.
Yeah.
Well, he knows the business damage that he can do. But hey, you know, Tony Abbott's there, Eddie Maguire's there. There's
yeah, they're all here. Starting to see. Yeah,
they're all starting to merge into one.
Well, I think that's all we've got time for, unfortunately. I probably could chat all night, but a huge thanks for coming in and chatting to us tonight. It's been great fun.
I know it has. It slipped away from us, hasn't
my
it?
Cheesy music aside.
No, your cheesy music was the icing on the sporting cake. But you've been listening to Hear Me Roar tonight. Thank you to everyone who texted in. Thank you very much, Helen. Thank you for coming in.
It's been great. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
And thanks also to Lynn Hillier, who joined us on the line earlier tonight. We'll be back the same time next week, which is Thursday at 7 p.m. for another edition of Hear Me Roar.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.